Back on downtown. It's an inside joke there, Rome. If you want to, as we talk about the making of the film Caligula with our next guest. He is a talented writer, author of some terrific books, including A Futile and Stupid Gesture. Josh Karp has got a brand new piece about the making of one of the worst films of all time, and he joins us here on Downtown. Good day, Mr. Karp. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you, Rick?
Doing very well, thank you.
Good. Glad to hear it.
Absolutely wonderful piece. First of all, man, thank you for introducing me to Airmail. What a great bunch of content is on there.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's like an online Vanity Fair. It's terrific.
Well, let's talk about the making of Caligula, one of the worst movies of all time, but one of the best movies in many ways. As you point out in your piece, Dame Helen Mirren, I think, sums it up best. An irresistible mix of art and genitals.
And indeed, it was absolutely that, for sure. It was, it's funny. I actually went to see the movie when it came out in Boston when I was in high school with a bunch of friends. We thought, wow, this is going to be like, you know, this great kind of, you know, movie filled with sex. And it was the most terrifying thing I have ever seen at that time in my life. I think all of us were ready to swear off sex until we were at least 20.
That's so funny you say that, because Carrie and I were talking about it on the air the other day, and we both said, my analogy was it was like Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman in Eyes Wide Shut. They found a way to make sex boring and a bit repulsive.
Yeah. Oh, it was. I mean, it was terrifying. I mean, the thing that really stuck with was the 5-story tall human weed whacker that decapitated people.
Yeah.
In the stadium. That I remember seeing that and just being like, "This is not the movie I bargained for."
Oh well, it seems like a lot of people, particularly some of the actors, felt that way. But let's go back to the beginning. This was all the brainchild of Gore Vidal, who had a lot of good ideas in his life. And this, perhaps in concept, was a great idea.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, the film, you know, started out as a treatment by Roberto Rossellini. So, I mean, that's a pretty, you know, pretty sophisticated beginning there. And then they, and the idea was that this film was going to be a portrait of Caligula, but also a portrait of what, you know, of what it was like to live in the Roman Empire under Caligula, and show, you know, the plight of the poor and you know, and the living conditions and all that stuff. And then Gore Vidal got his hands on it. Yeah, they asked him to write the screenplay, and his initial idea was, this is a movie about what happens if you give a young man life and death power over everybody else in the world. From there, it developed.
And indeed it did, although when you talk about presenting a look at the times that Caligula lived in, you mention in the piece that a former Harvard dean said, oh, historically, this thing was dead on.
Right. Well, there was an obscenity trial in Boston. And yes, they called a Harvard dean to testify about Caligula, which I would have loved to have been in the courtroom. and he said, you know, the question before the court was, you know, beyond the content, does this movie have any historical value or artistic value? And he said, well, you know, it's incredibly accurate. You know, I'm not saying it's a good movie, but as far as, you know, portraying the Roman Empire at the time, it's extraordinarily accurate. And I also, Malcolm McDowell, who stars as Caligula, told me a great story when I was working on the piece, which was that years later, he was making a movie with Colin Firth, and that Colin Firth is like a Roman history buff, and was going on about how incredibly accurate the film was. And I think Malcolm McDowell was like, you got to be kidding me. I don't think he enjoyed having Caligula brought back up.
Now, had Gore Vidal also, I know he wrote the book, did he write the screenplay for Myra Breckinridge too?
Yes, I believe he did.
So that's,
I'm fairly certain.
That's a pretty significant chunk of wonderfully awful film history that he's involved in.
Yeah, you know, I mean, he contributed to the screenplay, and I'm blanking, for a film like Spartacus or one of those type of films. Was a really smart, you know, guy, brilliant guy, not, you know, novelist, but his movie track record between Myra Breckinridge and he disowned both movies. You know, both of them. I mean, the whole thing with this film was that they were going to call it Gore Vidal's Caligula, because that lent like this real air of class and sophistication to the project, which of course then was produced by Bob Guccione from Penthouse Magazine. So it needed a little touch of class.
Well, let's talk about that. We're talking with Josh Karp here on Downtown. How in the world did Bob Guccione get involved in the production of this film?
Well, it's interesting. Guccione was, before he was we'll call him a magazine publisher, before he was in the pornographic magazine business, he was a real artist. I mean, he was, I don't know how talented he was, but he was very, he intended to make his living as an artist, and he was living in Europe. And he was also a photographer, which lent itself to his creation of Penthouse Magazine. And he had been a pretty substantial investor in Chinatown and The Longest Yard. So he was no dummy and no stranger to the film business. And he thought this was going to be the first. Gore Vidal brought him into the project. And he intended this as the first in a series of, I guess one would just have to say, historically accurate, erotic portraits of the idea that power corrupts absolutely. His next film, which never got made, was going to be about Catherine the Great. And again, historically accurate and extremely explicit.
And, of course, never one for subtlety or understatement. You write that he predicted Caligula would rank as, quote, a cinematic landmark a la Citizen Kane.
Yes, he missed on that one. It's a cinematic landmark of some kind, but I don't know that Citizen Kane is the comparison.
Well, the cast of this film is so strong. I mean, we mentioned Helen Mirren, Malcolm McDowell, but also the great Peter O'Toole and Sir John Gielgud, all roped into this film that they clearly thought was going to be something other than what it became.
Yes. One of my favorite stories was Peter O'Toole showing up on the set, and he had given up alcohol temporarily and was smoking weed the entire time. And he arrived on the set to see John Gielgud. I will not deign to try to do a Peter O'Toole impression, but he said, hello, Johnny. He said, what's a knight of the realm like you doing in a porno movie? O'Toole was great. He hated the director. He hated Guccione. And he spent all of his time trying to undermine both of them.
The numbers that you unearthed in your research were staggering. 64 sets, 3,000 costumes, wigs crafted from 1,000 pounds of human hair, 450 gallons of blood, a tank filled with more than 1,000 gallons of pure mineral water, which had to be changed twice daily, and a 175-foot-long floating ship with 120 hand-carved oars.
It was not a small production. I mean, again, this was, you know, the intent was that this was going to be a great historic. Oh, it was Ben-Hur, by the way, that Gore Vidal.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Spartacus. I mean, that was the idea. It was going to be a grand, you know, historical epic, like all those Hollywood films, like, you know, like the Ten Commandments and things like that. And so they hired a world-renowned designer. I think his name was that Daniello Dettali or something like that. And they spared no expense in trying to make this, you know, an absolutely, you know, historically accurate film and a really a lavish, big budget production.
So where did it start to go south in the process?
Well, I think there were two things that kind of happened somewhat simultaneously. One was Gore Vidal wrote the script, and the script was, Bob Guccione anticipated that Penthouse readers were going to be a substantial part of the audience, and Penthouse curious readers. And Gore Vidal's initial script was only had one scene of heterosexual sex, and plenty of homosexual sex, which to Bob Guccione was not super saleable to his audience. So Guccione was that I loved. I spoke to a woman who had been a publicist for Penthouse, and she said, Gore was sending Bob pages of the script, and Bob was giving Gore notes. She said, if you can imagine Bob Guccione giving Gore Vidal notes on a script. So that was number one. That was a real problem, the script. And then number two was the choice of director. At first, they had talked about John Huston possibly directing the film. They Lena Wertmuller had talked about making the film, and she wanted to name it. That one of the things was, as I said, they were calling it Gore Vidal's Caligula. And she wanted to call it Lena Wertmuller's Caligula. And she wanted to cast Jack Nicholson as Caligula, which would have been kind of great.
Wow, yeah.
And instead, Rossellini's nephew, Franco, who was kind of a middleman producer on this, saw a film called Salon Kitty, which was in the, trying to think of how I would describe it, in a genre unto itself. It was a softcore erotic Nazi exploitation film about it.
Yeah, that is a limited genre. Yes.
Yes, it is. It's memorable for that reason because I believe it is the only film in that genre. And it was directed by a man named Tinto Brass, who is currently, I believe, suing the people who are re-releasing Caligula over wanting to have it, having it restored to his vision rather than the vision of what they've done. And he was kind of a cigar-chomping, stocky, little political, extremely revolutionary liberal type of guy, and he hated authority. And he found his authority that he was, bumping up against was Bob Guccione. And there was a great scene where Malcolm McDowell, there was the entire Roman army was naked. And Malcolm McDowell said, why are we filming them naked? And Tinto Brass said, because if we don't screw Guccione, we've completely failed. So he was working against him. And what would happen was, Guccione wanted this to be filled with sex with the Penthouse pets, who were their playmates. And every time he showed up on the set, Tinto would film, the Penthouse pets in these erotic scenes. And then when he was when he was gone, Tinto would just shoot all kinds of bizarre stuff involving, dwarves and elderly people. A lot of stuff that would not appeal to the Penthouse crowd.
Yeah, including a sex scene with a live eel.
Yes, a live eel. He did employ a live eel. And there was a lot of discussion about how the live eel was handled. I think they sewed its mouth shut. I mean, it was really, he was completely, out of his mind, just doing, whatever he could do to make the movie a big pain in the butt for Guccione. I think Helen Mirren, she said something, she described him so well. She said, he was a big, charming Italian papa of a kind of guy, but he liked to stick a pepper in the ass of people.
Oh, my gosh. Well, the movie finally premiered in Rome in November of 79, and it didn't take long before officials decided the film was obscene, pulled it from theaters, and as you write, that provided with Guccione with the perfect publicity.
Right. I mean, one of the things he did that was kind of brilliant is he closed the set and he told everybody not to talk about the movie. So there was all this interest in Rome in what was going on at this place, Deer Studios, where they were shooting. And there were all these rumors of all kinds of horrific, you know, stuff. I mean, there's like animal slaughter, bestiality, you know, pedophilia, all this, you know, awful stuff. And Guccione didn't want anybody to say anything to counter that because he wanted to drum up as much publicity as he possibly could and as much curiosity about what this film would be.
And even came up with his own rating rather than submit it to the MPAA.
Right, which was another bit of genius. He came up with mature audiences and didn't allow anybody under the age of 18 in. And they charged like about two or three times the price of an average movie ticket at the time. He bought his own theater, and I think he bought a couple others, so he could show it on what they call a four-wall basis, which means basically he got all the money for the showing of the film, which, by the way, started out as a $7.5 million film and became a 20-ish million dollar film. So he was, you know, the sole funder of the film, and so he was, you know, he saw the way to make his money back, and he did, because he made it back at the box office, and then they were selling up until the mid-2000s. They were selling like 3,000 copies of the DVD every month.
And yet, as you point out, you can't find it anywhere today on a streaming service.
Right. Probably with good reason. it adds certainly a lot of, you know, a lot of curiosity among people. I mean, I have not seen what they showed at Cannes, you know, but I do know that, you know, Guccione wound up bouncing Tinto Brass out of the project. He locked him out of editing, and he was shooting his own scenes and putting them in the film. So the film is kind of a real mishmash of different styles and content when Guccione got done with it.
But he defended the film right up until the end of his life and said that it certainly was not to be considered smut.
No, absolutely not. I mean, you know, one thing, you know, I talked to his son, Bob Guccione Jr., who I think was the publisher of Spin Magazine. And he said, you know, that his father really, really wanted to be taken seriously as, you know, as a film, you know, as a film producer and a filmmaker and an artist. So, you know, there was, you know, a little bit of pathos to it, you know, and that here's this guy, you know, who is completely self-made, started out as a visual artist, was, I think, possibly, a good photographer. And he really, you know, despite becoming one of the richest men in America at one time, desperately wanted to be taken seriously.
Now, over time, sometimes critical opinions on films change. Have the last four decades been kind to Caligula? Caligula, I can't even say it.
Not that I found. There was, you know, I think Colin Firth was probably the most favorable thing that's been said about the film. You know, telling Malcolm McDowell that it was historically incredibly accurate. It was, it has not gained in its reputation, though. I think, you know, it's amazing that they're, you know, re-releasing it and, you know, at Cannes, and that it still garners attention, because, I mean, it was this kind of one-off epic landmark. I mean, it was, you know, if you can imagine, it was a sweeping historical softcore porn epic about Roman history. So, I mean, it was certainly unto itself.
Yeah, and it certainly didn't hurt the career of any of the stars.
No, you know, not at all. I mean, it was interesting. I mean, Helen Mirren had a great sense of humor about it. I mean, really, she, you know, as you said, she said it was an irresistible mix of art and genitals, and she told me, you know, that it was, I think she said it was kind of amazing and kind of horrible working on the film. And she told me a good story that about her mother coming to her very proper English mother coming to visit the set, where everyone was walking around nude and all kinds of insane stuff was going on. And she was just kind of, you know, sitting there worried about people getting cold and because they weren't wearing clothes and things of that nature.
Well, it's a wonderful ride. Better if you've seen the film, but even if you haven't, it will give you an appreciation of just how, well, how gloriously awful Caligula was. It's titled A Cavalcade of Depravity. It's available now. Sign up for email and you can get all the great content that's there. Josh, it's a wonderful piece. Thanks so much for making time to talk with us about it today. And thanks for the incredible amount of research that went into this. I'm glad you did it so the rest of us don't have to.
Yeah, if only my kids knew I was getting paid to do that. That would be...
A hero in their eyes, no doubt.
Oh, I'm sure.
Hey, thanks a lot, Josh.
Thanks for having me, Rich. Good talking to you.